Wow, finally! I've been waiting for voice for a long time now, so we got it back. Welcome to the session. It's called APT Cyber Attack, Cyber Crime, Cyber Warfare, and Cyber Threats Exposed. Well, we're going to cover as much as we can in 75 minutes. This is a topic that I could easily spend, I don't know, 2 weeks on presenting, so hopefully you'll enjoy it. If you haven't met me before, my name is Marcus Murray. I'm based in Stockholm, Sweden. I do work in the US a lot. I'm here like at least 1 week every month. So this is kind of my second home. My main focus is penetration testing, security assessments in different ways, incident response, stuff like that. And I work together with a good team of good people. This is one of my closest friends in friend in crime, or what do you say? Brother in arms?
Brother in crime.
Yeah, brother in crime, that's better.
My name is Aslan Shikarty, I work for TruSec. Just the same thing, almost the same thing as Marcus does daily. I do almost the same things there. Besides that, I have a background as a developer, so I do my own tools. Sometimes you need that whenever you're doing penetration testing, security assessments, and so on. The last year, we've had very good time spending on some DoD-related project here in the state. So we hope we see some good results out of that project as well.
Yeah, we can bring some experience from that into this. So, and if you never met Hassan before, they call him the Wolf. So if you hear about the Wolf, that's him. Obviously, it's from Pulp Fiction. Whenever we're in trouble, we bring in the Wolf. Yeah, that was supposed to be funny, but you don't have to laugh if you don't want to. No worries. So, okay.
Shall we give them a...
So, yeah, and one thing, if this session format is going to be completely live, except from the fact that we're going to have a OneNote. We're going to publish the OneNote and later on, and lots of things that we're going to talk about and cover will actually be posted to a SkyDrive. And we have these cards here, so if you take a card, you will actually get the link to the SkyDrive. So you don't have to make notes of that. There are a lot of cards over there after the session. So just come to us after the session, pick up a card if you want those notes. That's the only drawback of live sessions, that you don't get the PowerPoint. Now we give you something equally valuable. So, let's kick this going.
Let's go.
Well, we're going to do some attacks, so... I did not develop this product. It was not made by me, so I'm not taking any responsibility for why this is happening. But we're going to talk a little bit about the attacker, Ming.
Yeah, that's the attacker, Ming.
I am so happy I can enjoy you, make you happy and all that stuff. Maybe this will become a real live session, and I'm not scared of that, so I'm going to give it like one more shot, three times. And that's going to be almost it. So anyhow, this is... What the hell? Should we skip the entire thing and just do live stuff and talk about this whole thing? What do you think? Is that okay? Good, I think that's the only option, actually. So, no worries. If everything else breaks, not a problem. We can still enjoy you. I can talk shit about my friend or whatever. Yeah. Something. No worries. I've been here before. So, let's talk about this for a while. If you look at the problems today, we have a lot of experience from these kind of attacks because we're brought in when there are incidents handling situations when somebody has been hacked. And one thing that has changed, and we need to understand this, is if we look back in time, I mean, I remember the time when I started to do not penetration testing really, but security. I was interested in security when I was like a kid. I watched the movie War Games. And back in that time, people used to hack into systems for fun. Even 10, 15 years ago, I mean, if you were hacked, you should worry about a defaced website. Things are changing, and that's related to what we're doing, that Hassan said, in the States. If you look at the defense of countries today, you have the army because you want to protect the land, right? You have the air force because you want to protect the airspace. You have the navy and similar things because you want to protect your shores and borders and all the stuff from the water. Some countries have cyberspace, like Russia and the US. They cover cyberspace as a program. And they have people to defend their cyberspace. There's a new definition, even in the US, They have defined cyberspace as an area you have to defend. Therefore, they actually create cyber warriors. That's new. This is not an American thing. This is each and every country in the world are focusing on building cyber war armies. So that's the difference from when we were reading the War Games book or watching the movie. And what's interesting is that even though you would think that these armies would only go for other armies and do warfare between country and country, that's not what's going on here. We have countries targeting other countries, enterprises and companies, stealing IP. Stealing things that would put them in a better position, because finance is actually the way to win the wars of tomorrow. If you have all the intel and have all the money, then you win. It's not about killing people with guns anymore, not as much anyway. It's, from one perspective, it's actually better, but from another perspective, it's scary, because those wars are going on as we speak. I don't think most of you guys remember Stuxnet and all those things, Flamer. They were part of these warfare thing that is going on in the world today. So what we're going to do is we're going to do some live demos and show you the tools and how it works. And it's kind of interesting because not so many people paid attention to it until a company called Mandiant released a report a couple of months ago. This is the Mandiant report. They actually monitored a Chinese unit based in Shanghai, sitting in their 12-story building, hacking international and American companies, and they monitored them for a 12-month period. And they saw hundreds and hundreds of gigs leaving those companies by targeted attacks. They actually saw one company where they took 6.5 terabytes of data in one go, over a 12-month period, targeting the same enterprise, over and over again, but they just watched. They actually have a video of it. So you can watch a 5-10 minute video of look when they are looking at the Chinese attacker. Kind of interesting. So, I mean, it's kind of funny if you look in this document, remember me and Asana from TrueSec, they're actually telling you what tools they were using. So we're kind of popular, not only in the US and Europe, even the Chinese like us, because these tools are actually made by us. You're not laughing now. We weren't either, but it's good. I mean, it's commercial, it's good promotion, right? I mean, they do get detected nowadays in spam filters and stuff, but doesn't matter. But I mean, they're using the basic same tools that everybody else is using for penetration testing. So it's kind of interesting. The difference is that they have a lot of people and they're process-oriented. So they're working a process, using the right tool for the right purpose. And again, this is not just China. This is any country. But it was interesting, so I recommend you to read this report and download that movie and watch it. They exposed everything, the tools they were using, the infrastructure of the attackers and everything. So it's a really good report. That was actually my deck, more or less. But we're going to start by doing some investigation. We're going to target a company. So if we switch to Hassan's computer, and step number one in this kind of attacks will be harvest information off the internet or somewhere where you can do a very passive, slow attack. So Hassan's been targeting Apple.com. I don't know why you would ever do that, but why not? We wanted to do Microsoft, but that could actually have an effect on our next TechEd appearance or something.
You never know what you're going to find on the internet.
So
I'm just using the FOCA tool, FOCA, or whatever you would like to call it. This is one of many tools available out there on the internet to do that, this kind of scanning, downloading documents, digging through metadata, digging through information within the documents, and presenting all that in different categories. So I can pick and choose among those different categories, see wherever any useful data is found in these documents or not. So I just gave it the domain name apple.com and says this is the starting point, go ahead. So it starts going to search engines, it uses Google, it uses Bing, it uses other search engines, more specialized engines, and it looks for documents, it looks for domain names related to apple.com. It does as well DNS, scavenging, scanning, all that kind of activities, forward lookups, reverse lookups, tries to figure out what domains are related, what IP addresses are related to this domain name, and so on. So it goes from that simple domain name I just gave it, and then bring me a list of all different kind of things. Can begin from clients has been identified. You see here there are PC names or computer names together with maybe usernames along with them and so on. I have 145 identified computers in here. I have 49 servers so far. So within different subnets, you can think, oh, this is strange, this is odd, why should I pick these private IP addresses or public IP addresses? Well, everything that's been catched up in a DNS and in different documents will be presented here in this view. This tree just expanded different categories in the tree view and see what kind of servers are behind. See, many of these servers are apple.com something. We do have some related information as well, so if we go to domains, I started with apple.com. These are all DNS names that the tool could figure out, either by directly guessing on the names or doing reverse lookups based on the IP subnets it found. Most interesting part of this is actually the documents we found that are related to this domain name or these IP addresses or server names and so on. So we go ahead downloading all these documents. I actually did that last hour. And scanning through the content of these documents until we find document types. And then as a next step, then we start digging for usernames, email addresses, operating system, evidences of all this kind of information. So as we can see here, there are these documents apparently were running on Mac OS X 141 devices were identified. Windows XP 26, they're still running Windows Server 2000, 12 of them. Windows 7 and some Linux. It looks like it could be a correct figures. I don't know. Apple.com, anybody with the insights could maybe give us some hints. Email address-wise, these are only three email addresses that we can identify during this time. So that's very good, actually. That's very, very good. Normally, normally we get loads of IP addresses already in the first hour or something like that. So these, either they have been using some software or gateways to, clean up the documents or something like that. So something has been going on probably. You can see software that's been involved in all these documents, images, Word documents, whatever. So they are running, the highest number is actually Microsoft Office. And you see Adobe is a good second runner-up. So if an attacker would like to target this company, then they will probably go for one of these products on the top list. So it's most likely that there are some computers unpatched or not being handled correctly when regarding patching or updates. So most likely we'll find vulnerabilities in these products. What else? Folders. Let's see if we do have any internal, some internal names, some FTPs. This is very interesting. FTP is a clear text channel, clear text-based protocol. So we can probably go to there and start looking, digging on these servers as well if we're interested in that. This is just a good example of what you can find without being an authorized user. I'm just an anonymous user doing searches on the internet right now.
Yeah, and I did find one more email address. This is the Apple CEO Tom Cook. If you want to have his email address, email him for something. Maybe a discount on an iPad, or I don't know. You can obviously find them in any other way. And it's kind of funny when you look at the Apple exposure because it's fun that they use Windows, good for them. But still, any company you target, you will find information. This is the step number one in an APT. Collect information of that target, and sometimes they do it for years before they actually attack. And again, Apple is a bad example because they will never be hacked. Or when they're hacked, there will be no evidence that any data theft left its facilities, so you don't have to worry. Nothing will ever happen. Just a fact. So, let's... I actually took some slides. Let's talk about this process. So initial recon, that's what we talked about right now. We're going to move on to the initial compromise. We're actually going to start finding a way into this system or in this enterprise. We need to use the information that we had. If we know what applications they're using, what operating systems they're using, email addresses and stuff, we can use this to target this environment. The most common way to attack enterprises today is going for the clients and the users. That is the absolute most common way of doing it. Almost everybody gets hacked because of user behavior. Interaction with the internet, receiving emails, clicking on links. And especially when you are targeting them, so you know what applications they're using. So, we're going to set up an attack here. And it's going to be kind of interesting. We have some different components. I wish I had my OneNote. I feel a bit crippled. But we're going to work with a Trojan. This one Trojan is called Cybergate. And this is just a Trojan that you can purchase on the web. Doesn't cost too much money. It's pretty similar to the ones that they used in the APT1 Mandiant report that they found. And you can create your own server here. You can create a stealth server. So you create your own server. I'm just going to call it TechEd demo. And let's look at the features. And this was, I think it was $100. So if you select this, you get the settings. And you can, of course, pick and choose where you want it to connect. So if you look at the infrastructure of an attack, you're going to target the enterprise. You don't know exactly what it looks like, but it's got a firewall. It's got obviously some DMZ systems, like web servers and so forth. And of course, it's got internal systems and clients. Is it embarrassing if I tell you that my mother is an artist? And the attacker would be somewhere on the internet. So the idea is to somehow set up an attack so that you can make the client connect back to you. So what we need here is some kind of communication channel so we can get to this system. And then some way for him to connect back. So that's what we're going to focus on. Step number one, get on that system. Step number two, get back. So this is actually the home address of the attacker. So we can add any address here of our choice. For this purpose of this demo, 192.168.194.1, and then a port of our choice. I'm going to do 999 because of this demo, but normally you would obviously use port 80 or 443 or something similar to that. Take this away, delete. And you can have your own password, you can group your targets. Sometimes you have large botnets with thousands of targets, you need to group them to know what they are. You can install this using various obscure methods. You can actually hide it so that it doesn't show in the file system. You can melt it after install so the files are gone when you install them. You can make it persistent so it survives restarts. I'm doing this to scare you actually. I want you to understand that this is available. $100. Keylogger, of course we have a keylogger built in. This is also interesting, by the way, mutex. Do you all know what a mutex is, or mutant? They actually register mutexes or mutants so that the application can check whether or not it's the same version is installed already or something, or check for the competition. So this is like a small string that you can put in the system. So many times when we find this kind of malware in systems, we identify the mutants and then we do broad scans for that mutant in other systems, then we can find them all, at least the same version of them. Anyhow, next step, keyloggers. Of course, you can generate your unique mutants for every attack. Keylogger. Of course, you can log keys. This one can send things to FTP, but this is just an example. You can also do live keylogging. You have different miscellaneous things. You can drop your own scripts and stuff. You can get an email whenever this is connecting. This is kind of lame, but you can, of course, make warnings and stuff during install, just as a diversion, I guess. Binder. Even though this is old school, you should know about it, or you should be reminded. If not that you would ever download anything from any BitTorrent site or stuff like that, especially not from Pirate Bay, the Swedish thing, but nothing in the world is free. I can tie any application to this Trojan. So when you download the installer, you will actually get the Trojan for nothing. It will come bundled with it. So think about that. They're always there. Free software is often compromised in the sense that they have Trojans installed. Not all the time. I'm just saying often. Often when you're on those networks and they give you Photoshop for free. And then you can create that server, can build it. Actually, you don't have to turn it into an .exe file. You can actually turn it into shell code, so you can drop it straight into memory using other techniques, or put it inside your own custom application. So I can build it. I actually have one built already. This is just for, I just wanted to walk you through the process. So the problem is today, if this is an .exe file, it's kind of hard to send an email with an .exe file attached, right? You wouldn't fall for that, would you? How many of you guys would fall for that? None of you. Good job. I'm not sure, but I decide to believe in you today. I trust you. So, how can you do this? Well, for example, what they did in the APT attacks in that Mandiant report is that they started to send spam and stuff with links and attachments that did not look like a binary file. It could be Office documents, PDF files, stuff like that. So why not do that? And what we did this morning, actually, and this is the attack machine right here. You can see from the background that it's an attacker. This is what evil looks like today. That was obviously funny. Mm-hmm. Looking at this, this is actually an account made by the hacker. So you need to be aware of this too. It's very easy today to get, and this is what they do. They make the register domains that looks like real domains or trustworthy domains. So this is amixinvitation.com. I mean, some people would actually fall for this. We created this morning. I bought it for $10. And I connected it to Google Apps. Why? Not because Google Apps is the best thing, but it's free. Google Apps for Business. So I can connect a real domain name to the Google App application and send an email in that name. And whenever something is sent, it's being sent from the Google Mail servers. Those are trusted. They don't come from some strange country somewhere far, far away or something. They will never get blacklisted because they are the Google Mail servers. Right? So, let's make a draft here. And this is the best I could come up with this morning. This is to Tim Target, not Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple. Dear Tim, thank you for being one of our most distinguished customers. Today we're launching a new product available only to a select number of people, blah, blah, blah. You will get access to luxury villas, private jets. He's got all that stuff already, but maybe he'd like this, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, attached you will find the PowerPoint document that will present the complete offering of the contract details. And why not? Let's put a presentation in there. No, next time. Nothing in the world is free. They try to give me stuff as well. So let's do this PowerPoint presentation persistent. And let's send the email. Of course, it was from Michaela Lovely. So going to the other side, to the target, the C1 here, in the inbox, you will see a new mail from Michaela Lovely. This is from services@amixinvitation.com. And it's kind of strange that Tim from Apple is using Outlook.com, but who would have known? Anyhow, you can see there is an attachment, the presentation, PowerPoint. You get the same thing, and it's from Michaela Lovely. You can contact her directly if you have questions and stuff. I mean, maybe you can see some error in there because I'm Swedish. Normally, when the Chinese guys send email to me, I kind of laugh about it because they're using Google Translate. It's not that good. Or whatever country. So, again, he can download that attachment. can put it on the desktop. And this is the presentation right here. If we take this presentation and run it, in the attacks they did two different techniques. Either they used macro, common macros, so depending on your macro settings it will execute, or they used vulnerabilities in Acrobat Reader, Office products, or similar things. And we're going to look at some tool that has a lot of them later so you can see what it is. So I don't want you to be scared of PowerPoints per se now. I mean, I know we're all a tech ed. I know you're going to download PowerPoints, right? So you can have our PowerPoints too later, after you watch this. So, this is the presentation persistent. It's actually not too nice presentation. I would put more work into if this was a real attack. This is a cyber gate. If this attack will work, there will be a client connecting here. That means that the machine is hacked and it has a connection to the attacker on the internet, an outbound attack. So let's just run it. And I can, doesn't matter how I do it, I can open it like a PowerPoint. I can do a slideshow and I can start the show. And it's the limitless program, whatever. And then let's look at the other side, and we can wait. And I'm okay with the fact that OneNote didn't work, but yeah, this worked. Thank you. So, this guy is now hacked. What does that mean, really? Well, I have different managers here, so if I want to look at the file system of that guy, I can actually parse his entire file system. I can steal all his files. I can copy them, upload them, download them. So I can put my evil tools in there, and I can upload all their data. So this is what they do. It's kind of interesting, there is a built-in feature for compression. During these APT attacks, they always compress the data. They actually had special tools that would just take all the content of the email folders, compress it, and send it up. They were very focused on emails. Even though we never have anything secret in emails because we know it's like clear text over the internet, they were very interested in emails. How strange is that? Huh? It's kind of a neat tool, right? Remote administration at its best. I mean, we have other things as well. I mean, looking through this, I'm not going to run all of it, but you can check like install programs, the Windows Manager, Clipboard Manager, process, services, registry, startup, device. I mean, they all work. So you can get a very good view of this computer. If you want to go like hardcore, you have webcam, audio, password keylogger things. I'm just going to do desktop as an example. So I can get the desktop, it's running this presentation. Not that I would ever do that, but I could actually take the mouse and kind of get involved here. End the show on that guy. Close this down. So even though the presentation is not running anymore, I still have control of the system, because what we did was we downloaded this, or whenever you started this presentation, we actually jumped out from the presentation and executed code outside in the operating system. So that's what you're seeing right now. And this is persistent, it will actually survive a restart. There are run keys and stuff in the user hive even, you don't even necessarily have to be admin, depending on the techniques and skills. Question, of course, this is like a classroom, you're allowed to ask questions. We're not going to be able to take them all, but question. This is a very interesting question. If we're doing netstat-ao, will we be able to pick up the IP address? That depends on the tool. If you have hiding techniques in the tool, you will not see it. If you don't, you will see it. All I can say is we have a lot of homegrown tools that will not show in netstat, even though they do network connections. They can, however, never hide from the network, so if you have devices on the network monitoring traffic, you will still see it. The problem is today, and even looking at these attacks, I mean, I can host my attack systems in the cloud. Then you will see that somebody's connecting to Azure. How bad can that be? Right? Yeah, or Amazon Cloud or whatever. So you can use any jump station, if you will, as the source of the attack. You don't have to look to a foreign country anymore. Actually, if people from Sweden are doing attacks, you will see nothing coming out of Sweden. We will use somebody else, like everybody else. So it's not like China, it could be any country. And Sweden and the normal. US are friends, by the way.
It's very normal that they use three or four jump servers as well. So you will only see the first step, and then you will get lost after that.
One question more, and then we're going to have to continue. Interesting question. We're going to get back to anti-malware techniques and stuff like that later, and we're going to demonstrate antivirus circumvention, how it works, because that's an interesting thing to discuss, really.
Yeah.
So good point. It's kind of neat, right? So, actually, why not? We can do this right now. Mm-hmm. Why not? This is a live session. We can talk about antivirus. What we did, let's see if I have something in this PowerPoint, maybe. Oh my God. It's perfect. That demo was done. So, I do think I have something in this PowerPoint that I can use to talk about this. Nope. Yeah, here it is. Actually, last year on TechEd, we talked about, this is a follow-up on that session, we talked about the attack that was done on RSA. And they actually used a Trojan called the Poison Ivy. We're very proud because it was a Swedish Trojan. Pirate Bay and Poison Ivy. What's next? Anyhow, We choose to run the Poison Ivy through the antivirus engine Virus Total. Virus Total has engines from all the different antivirus vendors. And it's actually bought by Google nowadays. Mm-hmm. So this is a Google service. Awesome. So if you look at this, it got detected at the time by 39 out of 42 engines. So it was detected by each and everybody. And we were kind of... I mean, we were a little bit surprised. Why would they use Poison Ivy? Why not make something custom? So we asked ourselves the question, how hard would it be to take the Poison Ivy Trojan and turn it into something that is undetectable? That will answer your question. So we came up with this tool. We call it AV Hide. And this is coded by a colleague of ours. It took him like 5 hours to build it. It's not that complex. All it really does is it will change the behavior of the binary so that it will actually not run everything in the same way it's supposed to. It will move things around. It will change the execution path of the binary, that's all. So it will relink stuff in the binary. So, just to show you how that tool works. It's so simple, and I can talk about a little bit about what we had to do, because in version 1, we had AV-Hide, and it worked in a way so that you could take an .exe file, and you could change the behavior, and then you made an output file, so it was like the new version of that file. It worked with most antiviruses. The problem is, after a while, when we kept posting things to VirusTotal, we realized that they were actually looking at what we did. So even though it was always different, they tried to really detect what we were doing. So they started to detect the results. So we had to make a second version. And in the second version, we added a feature called loop count. So we actually create a pause before the execution. Especially Kaspersky, I'm gonna give them some credit here. They detected like everything, because they used good heuristics. But using heuristics will mean that you have to take that file during execution and look at the behavior. So the question is, how long can you really wait? The user is not going to accept a 30-minute wait, right? Okay, let's open this file and see, and after 30 minutes, it's going to let it go. So we realized that we only had to time a pause. So we know that Kaspersky, maybe you have to wait for, I don't know what, 10 seconds, 15 seconds. While in Symantec, maybe you have to wait for 2 seconds. So we know what loop counts. We're just creating a loop that does nothing. So we can circumvent antivirus. The problem is with the CyberGate, because this is the one, the Trojan I used just now. When I took it, and I put the persistent.exe, which is the evil tool, and I put it in a machine with a recently installed and updated antivirus. This is Symantec, just as an example. I'm not going to bang on Symantec. This is actually the home version, Norton antivirus. This is the only one that I could get for free. And when I connect to a network share that has it installed or that has it available. Let's see. It needs some time. I don't have time. CMD. I'm just going to do netuse. Netuse. 81941. Thank you. One slash. Thank you for not telling me. Thank you for being here. Yay. Wow. It should have, you know, popped up, but who cares? So the problem is, if you take like Netcat or something and you run it, you will see threat detected, right? It works. But when we did it on this tool, nothing happens. It actually doesn't get it. So, and we had some problems here, because even looking at like the GSEC dump tool or the LSL SAS, which was in the Mandiant report, our own tools, the 64-bit version gets detected because it's been found like everywhere. The 32-bit version is not detected. I mean, the antiviruses are really unreliable. You can see some tools that you don't even have to do anything. They will still be there. Some tools that you have to run them through something like AV-Hide and they will be undetected. So you have to be proactive. If you get this kind of malware on your systems, if the right guy or the senders, you will get hit. So you have to be proactive. You can't let them execute code on your systems. It's not going to work. They will be successful. So that's the Trojan. And antivirus hiding. So you can, thinking about that, that is when you get your first foothold. And if you look at the result that we did with antivirus the week after the AV, by the way, by the AV hider, it was totally undetected. And it was kind of funny because this particular version, when we waited a week and we ran it again, we could see that four antivirus vendors actually detected it. So they must have like a premier program with Google. Waited two more weeks, some more had it. So you could actually see who was a platinum, who was a gold, silver, etc. Some people still can't find it. They have the free version.
Or the no version.
That's the way it is. So, looking at that, the process again. Mm. You have the initial recon. That's what we did. Let's check out the information on the web. You do the initial compromise. That would be sending that PowerPoint. And I'm going to show you another tool to show you the extent of what you can use in order to do these attacks. I just want you to understand what's out there. So this is Core Impact. And Core Impact has a lot of features. This is like a hacking tool. Made for penetration testers. You don't have to worry. If you read the license agreement, you're only allowed to attack your own system, so nobody really need to worry about this tool. But it does client-side information gathering, so it basically does the same thing FOCA does, mm-hmm. better or worse, depending on the features. But then it has client-side attacking penetration. And I love this tool. It's so nice to me all the time. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the client-side attacking penetration wizard. This wizard will guide you through the process of conducting penetration tests against targeted users through social engineering techniques. And if you click next, you can send email to and from people. Amazing feature, huh? So if you want to send things to services, whatever, from somebody, whatever, it will actually depend on the SMTP settings on these networks. I'm not going to run this attack. At Apple, that's maybe stupid. Somebody might get mad. But the interesting thing is the next one. I mean, you can choose your attack modes. You can do phishing attacks, or you can do real exploit attacks that will actually compromise systems. You can actually target mobile phones. Really? Yes, you can. Anyhow, this is what's interesting. The different kinds of problems it will utilize in order to compromise a system. And this will make you understand why FOCA where similar tools are valuable. Because it can find, it has built-in exploits targeting these applications. And it's like everything. Adobe Flash, Adobe Photoshop, Apple QuickTime, CorelDRAW, Crystal Reports, HP stuff, IBM stuff, Internet Explorer, McAfee. I love these antivirus things. So if you have the subscription of the antivirus updates, then you will get hacked. It's so funny. Because they're utilizing that that ActiveX component in order to feed code onto the system or execute code. Of course, IE, Office, Visio, Novell. Yeah, somebody yesterday actually admitted they're still using Novell. Oracle, Unbreakable, Real Networks. I mean, it's all here. So the reason I'm showing you this is every time I show you an Excel macro exploit, you go home and you fix macros. I want you to understand that you need updated applications, hardened systems. Third-party applications needs to be updated as well. You need to think about what you purchase. Don't just go for the cheapest stuff. Go for the quality providers. It will actually change the game. So this is valuable information if you don't want to get hacked. It's funny, you know, the RSA attack I mentioned earlier, they targeted RSA, but they got all the secrets to all the RSA dongles in the world. So following that attack was 800 other companies that got hacked and targeted just because of the fact that they had those secrets and credentials, so they could easily get some more while they were at it. Initially, they did RSA just to get to Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin, defense industry companies. But they took 800 others just on the go. And, I mean, these are just the exploits. If you go back, you can take real Trojans, you can zip them, you can put them into Acrobat Reader, Excel spreadsheet, infected binaries. And there are so many things here, attachment exploits. Other things, it's just too much. Zip files. So if you're using the right version of zip and you extract it, you get hacked. Because you have zip installed, WinZip. Nice, huh? How many of you guys want a free version of Core Impact? Good sales case. I'm going to tell Mike at Core. Come to me later. I might be able to give you a 10-day eval or something. Who knows? But it's important to understand that these tools are out there. They're made for penetration testing. But again, if you're a government agency, why can't you buy something similar to this? So this is what we need to be able to defend against. We can use it to assess ourselves. We can also use it to attack others. So important to think about. So, next step. Going from the initial attacks, with my good friend here, establishing foothold, that is really getting the Trojan in there. Many times, the first attack will just be something very small, a small command prompt that will just phone home. The next step will be installing the big Trojan. Now I did everything in one go. I installed the fully-fledged Trojan right away. But just as a reminder, this will be undetected by antivirus, so you have to stop it at the gate. Another thing that's very important to understand is that low privileges can help you a lot. They will not make you invulnerable. We can still execute the Trojans, but it will be more difficult to survive restarts and things like that, extract hashes and things that you can use for further attacks on the enterprise. So using the lower user is really, really important here. And when you establish your foothold, what you will do is you will start collecting secrets from that system and start initiate lateral movement. Lateral movement means jumping from one computer to another until you compromise the entire domain. When you have the entire domain, then you can extract data, and that will complete the mission. So Asan is going to show you some techniques on how you can jump from one computer to another using stolen secrets. Many of you guys have seen this before. We're going to use GSEC dump, LSLSS, and tools from our own store. But we're also going to show you a tool called Mimikatz, because I'd like to credit the guy who did it. He realized that you actually store clear text passwords in Windows, even Active Directory account passwords and stuff, while you're logged on. So it's important to understand the thing with dependencies. So Asan is going to show you a little bit of that.
So just to keep this simple, I have a couple of machines. This one is the one who got hacked, the SRV3, which is highlighted right now. So this is where the attacker has its initial foothold. We would like to go to SRV1 or 2, depending on which one is the most interesting. SRV1 is apparently the domain controller, so that's where our ultimate target is. Being on a machine, if you use the Trojan Marcus showed you or any other tools, possibly an exploit in a software or something like that, after a good while maybe or after a short while, don't know, depending on the situation, you will get to that point that you are a local admin or running as a system service on that machine. So you will try to elevate your privileges as much as possible and then get to that point that you can run as system services or admin, which will lead you into system services. So what can we do if we do have that privilege level? Let's just check a couple of these tools. I have the Mimikatz, the TrueSec tools, that we'll just check around with them. So go to users, the hacker account. It's very normal that hackers or intruders, they create their own accounts so they can go forth and back to that machine, log in and log off as freely as they would like to. So I just go to the desktop and then TrueSec tools. I have a couple of our tools here, the GSEC dump, the LSL SAS, the run hash. Just going to demonstrate some of them. So the GSEC dump can be used to dump so-called LSA secrets. I can dump hashes, I can dump SAM database, I can check for logged in user sessions and so on. So let's just do some of these things. Let's see, sorry. So what I did right now, just run the GSEC dump with the switches capital S and a small L, which will list all so-called LSA secrets on this machine. Okay, so what are the LSA secrets? What is it we are actually looking at right now? If we look at the situation, we have a couple of services on a Windows machine running with the so-called services accounts. I guess if I just ask you who doesn't have services account in their Windows environment, nobody will raise their hands, I guess. So we all know about services accounts. We have backup services, we have Exchange services, SQL servers, other type of service that require a specific service account to be able to run within our environment. It could be clusters, it could be for other reasons. I need to reach between machines for that specific service and so on. So then I go creating a service account, I set a specific static password for that service account and go use that service account password on my machine. So
and it's kind of funny because we've been talking about this for 10 years. I mean, for real, for 10 years. There's actually another session on mitigating attacks like this made by one of the guys from Microsoft. But we still see them in each and every penetration test all the time. The dependencies that makes you able to take the secrets from one computer and use them to log into other systems until you compromise the domain. So that's how important this is. It's everywhere still today.
So this is a pretty critical example, a service called Key Management Services or something like that. It uses a domain account, SVC03 at demo.lab, which is my domain. And there is a password inputted here. And there are special permission act as an operating system service granted for that account. So given the fact that there is a password related to that account, every time that account starts, somebody needs to log in. There should be some mechanism that uses this password to create a logon session on the system and whatever Kerberos tickets we need or any other type of credential information we need to be granted for that service. So what we were looking at, right, when I did the GSEC dump for the LSA secrets is actually part of that storage. Now, the LSASS service, if you look at your running services or running processes within your Windows machine, you'll figure out there is a process called LSASS.exe. So that's the highest authority within any Windows operating system or any Windows system in terms of credentials. what the LSASS doesn't know about doesn't really exist, if we express it that way. So for all services that use services accounts with related passwords, that password is held in memory. It's actually held in the registry, then it's get loaded in memory when the service starts up or the system starts up. And what we can see here, there is a SC service, key management services related information in this DOM. And it is actually the clear text password for that account we see here in this DOM. So if you were looking for that service account, that's the clear text password for that service account. So to figure out what account is related to it, just go look in the service manager and check what account is being pinpointed as a login account for that. So the SVC03 and the demo.lab domain is actually running the abcd.1234 as a password. Okay? This is an example of tools that's been used by, mentioned by the maintenance report and used by the Chinese guys. So let's look at the other tool that was mentioned there. It's called the LSLSAS. This is a 64-bit version of it because I'm running a Windows 2008 R2 64-bit. So this is a very well-patched system or very well-updated system. Let's do run this tool. I just give it a random string as a parameter, and it will go grab information from this system. So what we see here is there is an account called demo/SRV3$. I'm on the SRV3 machine. So this is apparently the computer account itself. I do see a demo/SVC03. Okay, and I do see SRV3 hacker as well. And these are the accounts that are actually logged in right now in this system. So there is a session related to all of these accounts. The computer itself, of course, its own identity within the domain. It holds its own password. It identifies itself against the domain and so on. And there is the service account we were looking at. So that specific service is logged in or is being logged in the system. And the hacker account, which is logged in. So as you can see, the hacker account is a local account. It says SRV3/hacker. So this is not a domain account. So the only domain account I got here is the SVC3/demo/SVC03. So what is this we see after the account name? The things that have been dumped there. These are the so-called anti-hash and the LM hash values for that account. So this is the encrypted slash the hash password we can find in the clear or in the memory whenever we dump the LSA services memory. What is that useful for? Well, this is how the system deals with passwords internally. Whenever I type any clear text password, it's going to be translated into this hash format. There are two different formats, the LM hash and the NT hash. Now, in modern Windows systems, the LM hash is not saved permanently. It may be found in the memory, but it will never be saved permanently unless you override that setting. If the password is longer than 14 characters, you will not find any LM password either. So the computer account holds a password longer than 14 characters. So that's a very interesting thing to know about. So whenever you see zeros here, that means the password is longer than 14 characters. Now, these other guys have a password that is shorter than or equal 14 characters because I do have an LM hash represented in the system here. So that is a good information to have if you are into trying to crack these passwords or crack this system. If you get these passwords offline from somewhere, then you can push them in any suitable cracking tool to figure out what the clear text password is, maybe. Now, the most interesting thing that's happened the recent years is that we can skip the whole cracking activity altogether and jump forward to that point that we started reusing those passwords the way they are. the way we are looking at them right now. So we can actually reuse the passwords as is without the need to crack them. The trick here is that we take the encrypted password or the hash value of the password and we inject it into the LSA services memory. So we use DLL injection technology to write in the right place in the memory, convincing the LSASS service that, hey, there is a user logged in with these credentials, this username and this password. And then the next step, we try to use any service that requires a login. The system will actually reuse that information and do an automatic integrated logon towards that target we're going to. Before going there, let's look at another tool. It's called Mimikatz, which Marcus has been speaking about it. Let's go to the x64 version of it. I have prepared a couple of scripts because when you run the Mimikatz, you need to do the memory injection step and then you need to extract whatever data you would like to. So I just did a couple of small handy JavaScripts to help me with that thing.
Yeah, so all the scripts that we were showing and the tools that are for free, we'll make them available, links to them in that share later. So what Hassan just said is using Mimikatz, you do have to do some DLL injections, some things. Why not just create a script so you can just click and run?
Yeah.
So all that stuff will be available.
So as you see here in the first step, it's actually loading a library, which is injected into the LSASS EXE process. That's to get hold of the memory that that service is dealing with, as well as getting interactive with that service so we can go to those undocumented APIs or private APIs and talk to that service and let it give us access to information it can or it has actually in its config.
Yeah, so look at the data. Take it down a little bit.
So look at this. There is a user called Hacker logged in into the system, and that's the LM hash and the NT hash. Okay, and we look further down, it says the clear text password for that user is abc.123. And now that's for the Kerberos.
Yeah, this is very easy to comprehend mechanism for all the Canadians in the room, right? It's French.
There is other authentication providers in Windows as a system. So we have Kerberos to take care of the domain logon. Apparently, Windows support digest-based authentication. IIS and the web browser we use supports digest authentication. So that's the storage for the digest authentication password information or logon information. And there is a storage for the terminal services single sign-on authentication provider.
So you can ask yourself, and many people do, why would they store clear text passwords in the system? Why would they ever do that? Well, if the protocols needs a clear text password in order to give you single sign-on, that's what's going to end up there. If you're going to have to utilize hashes in order to generate secrets, then the hashes are going to be there. So this is by design. I think there's a big misunderstanding in the world. I mean, this is not necessarily a vulnerability. This is not necessarily a problem. As long as we don't expose these secrets by getting compromised, especially when it comes to important systems. So as long as we can keep the systems with the secret important keys safe, then we're all good. I don't believe in trying to somehow come up with a mechanism to save this data secretly inside the system, because there will always have to be a function that can bring it back to clear text. And if you compromise the system and have full access to it, you will be able to run those functions. So the solution is not to hide them more in the system. The solution is to run with low privs so you cannot, if you compromise in that context, you will not be able to get that data.
Yeah.
To not get hacked, to be proactive. That's the solution. We were in Redmond a couple of months ago and there was a discussion of people, how can you do this? I don't see the problem. If you want to support those mechanisms, that's going to have to be that way. The problem is when people have unpatched systems, when they browse strange sites and execute code on a system that they shouldn't trust.
This other section I've highlighted for you is the computer accounts. You see that password that was longer than 14 characters. It's actually longer than 14 characters. But what does it matter if we can have it in clear text that way? So I can actually reuse that password and use that computer account to authenticate to Active Directory, because it's just a regular account. Even though it's a computer account, it's still a regular account I can use for authentication purposes.
That is a long password.
Yes. So this is what we find in the memory, or if we politely ask the LSASS service, what information can you disclose for us? What kind of authentication providers are there underneath you, and what kind of information could you possibly tell about it? I can do some other interesting things. There is actually a possibility to extract certificates, machine certificates as well. I'm a little bit into PKI services and identity management using certificates, so that's an interesting thing for me. And it says now I've actually extracted the local machine certificate store. That's the private certificates that belongs to this machine in here. So in case we do have any certificates in here, we should be able to see them in that folder. So these are to the certificate, the clear text part of the certificate, which is the CER file. And then I have a PFX file, which includes the private key. So this is a complete export of the machine certificate together with his private key as well. This is regardless if the key is flagged for as exportable or not exportable or anything like that. So this is the certificate. This is probably a self-generated, self-signed certificate for the RDP protocol, what we can see here. If we happen to have any other deployed certificates, then we could export them the same way from the machine. So if you're a local admin, you can export those certificates as well using the Mimikatz. Any specific questions on the Mimikatz as such?
I think you're going to have to approach the mic, or you're going to have to scream out really loud.
If you store the private key in the TPM versus mm-hmm. the Microsoft Store, does that buy you any added security?
If the private key is stored in the TPM, does that give us any added security? If the private key is only stored in the TPM, or whenever it's loaded into the TPM, that's where it got decrypted, like the case we have with the virtual smart cards in Windows 8, then that's definitely an added security measure. You won't be able to get hold of that private key without putting efforts into trying to decrypt it first. And if it is only in the TPM chip, that's the way the smart cards holds it, then it should be impossible to get hold of it at all. So let's go back to the passing the hash things. We have the other tool we use to do that. I've demonstrated the LSLSS, now we have the run hash. The run hash is pretty simple. It receives an argument, which is the username, combination with the LM and TLM hash. So let's do that. So let's do the LSLSS first, extracting that information. There we go. And then we do the run hash, and we take, of course, the domain account. We hope for the best. So we take that guy.
I think you're going to get lucky.
cmd.exe. And what this tool does, it's actually act as run as, but without knowing the password. We're just injecting the whole thing into memory and spawning a new process with that information. So let's do net use. The domain controller is SRV1, and I will go to the admin $C$share. And that gets me a successful login. I'm logged in now with a local account in this guy. So if I do it from this netuse / SRV1 /C$, you see it's prompting me for the username, and I don't have that. If I would be just a hacker doing the LSS dump, then I don't have the clear text username password combination. So going this direction is much easier for me. So now I have an authenticated session as probably a domain admin into this system, because reaching the domain controller the admin shares on the domain controller normally requires domain admin credentials. So that's the simplest way probably to demonstrate the passing the hash technique, which has been used for the recent years by hackers, attackers, and penetration testers equally.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you look at the process, the lateral movement thing that Hassan did, that's what they do over and over again until they compromise the domain. And if you look at what they do afterwards, it's kind of simple. They just harvest data and copy it up. But we can look at some of the techniques used to extract the data, which is interesting. They're actually using MSN, for example. So they're using MSN channels, and they have MSN clients that are custom made so that they can run commands and they can upload and download files. They have the same thing for Google Calendar. This is from the Mandiant report. So you shouldn't worry too much about a certain protocol or a certain thing. They're going to use anything that they think will go under the radar. So again, proactive. You're not going to find it in firewalls. What Hassan and I usually do in penetration tests is that when we want to download things from the internet, because we have agents installed or Trojans installed in target systems, we will just base64 encode stuff, we will just send. There will be no binaries downloaded. It will just be text. Just randomly looking characters. That's all that's going to be there. No firewall ever picks up on that. So, and I can show you exactly what Hassan did when he prepared that PowerPoint for me in the last demo. If you look at the PowerPoint, it's actually it's a macro in this case. It could have been a 0 day, but this is a macro. And it's configurable, actually. It's kind of nice. He did this simple thing. He wanted some place so you can have not a static attack, so you can adjust to any environment. So if you look at the properties of the document, and if you show all properties, there is a hyperlink based property here, which is actually a downloader. So the application will go to this web server and download the persistent.jpg. So when the JPEG arrives, it will be transformed back into an .exe file and executed. So that's what's really happening. It doesn't have all the evil code within it. It's just a small function that will go off to a certain URL and download a JPEG file and turn it into a binary. That's all that's going to happen. So it's kind of important to understand that. The first attack is going to be very low, small footprint. Okay? And another thing that's important to understand is, where will I download stuff from? I didn't put my own IIS up there. This is actually a system on the internet. So this is a system I'm using. It's not really internet. I'm not hacking things just for fun, especially not when I have an audience. But this is the system I attacked last day in the pre-con we did. So I managed to find a vulnerability in this web application. So I got into the upload folder and I installed my own AXPX functionality. So I have an AXPX shell. This is not something built by Trusik. We have our own shells, but this is a hacker shell you can download from the web. So it will give you command line access to the system and a file browser and possibility to upload and download files. So I put the persistent JPEG in there. Kind of convenient. And if you're scared of these tools, if you think this is not good, if you can get this on your system, right? It's kind of funny because when I downloaded this, I think it's very nice for demo. You get all this functionality. But I gave myself a few minutes just to Google for it. So I went to Google, and looking at this, you can see the ASP shell by LT. So I Googled for this, and it's kind of scary. Or maybe I should have Binged it, I don't know, but I did Google for it. I admit, I am a sinner. So just clicking at some of these links, these are live systems hacked. I mean, I'm not going to run any code in front of the audience because that could or could not be illegal. But it's so interesting when you look at this. This is the hard drive and the code execution of some random system on the internet that belongs to glsystemsco.in. I don't know if that's Indonesia or something. I have no idea. But looking at this, I mean, you get a lot of hits. Some will, of course, be invalid, some will be valid, but again, 50,000. It's kind of scary. This is just one simple shell, and it didn't even rename anything in it. Some people get hacked. Not you, but everybody else, obviously. So I think it's important to understand, too, that the attackers will not use their own web servers. So when you backtrack that, it will be somebody else was hacked last week or some anonymous service they're just purchasing. And they're using a credit card they got from the Best Buy or whatever. They paid cash for it. These credit card gift certificates with a credit card number so that they can register to Amazon services. Whatever. So that's the way of the world. If you look at it, this is from the attack that targeted RSA. These are the domains they used. I mean, CNNDaily.net, TodayUSA.org, that's pretty creative. I mean, it doesn't look so scary, right? So this is what it looks like. It will not be correct. I mean, it will not be the one that belongs to somebody else unless they hack them. But it will look very similar. And they managed to target 800 companies using this attack. And the origins of the attacks, I mean, again, in this Mandiant report, the origin was in China. They actually have real pictures in the document of the buildings. They went there. Military staff is guarding the facilities. They actually have kindergartens and schools belonging only to the people working in that building. 12-story building, hundreds and maybe thousands of people working there. And again, I think there are a lot of good cyber defense military organizations in this country as well, so I'm not pointing any fingers. In my small country, Sweden, we have 10 million citizens. We have organizations like this as well. So this is just a change in the world I want you to be aware about. And wherever the governments go, everybody else will follow. So the techniques used by the best will be used by the second best, which will be criminal organizations. We see a lot of crime attacks that just targets money, or criminal attacks by organized crime. They used to do it differently, they used to do things manually by hand in the physical world, but guess what? The money moved away from the physical world. It's now stored in cyberspace. So they are building forces in cyberspace. And even though you may or may not be the most interesting company out there, depending on how you look at it, you have money, you have IP, you have resources, computing resources. We see more and more companies get hit. And it's moving from the largest one to the mid-sized one. Sooner or later, it's going to start targeting the smaller ones as well. Because everybody's got assets. And it's often too damn simple to get to them. In this country, you actually have to report when you get hacked. If you're a public company, the CEO can get to jail if he doesn't report. In my country, they don't have to. I would say out of 100 incidents we investigate, one or two ever gets noticed or gets published or gets reported. Most of the things that that is happening in the world is not official. We see things that nobody knows about. And that's what I want to share. I want you to understand that this threat is real. APTs are real. They like to call it APTs, but targeted attacks are real. APT is something that will make it sound better when you have to admit that you're hacked. You're still just hacked. Mm. It's not necessarily that difficult to break into your enterprise. I mean, I'd love to talk about what we can do about it, but that's going to be a different discussion for a different day. I'm sorry that I had some issues with my system. I hope you enjoyed this session. We did get to do all the demos we were going to do anyways. We have a session tomorrow that is a tools-based session. It's just going to be hacker tools. It's like the hacker tool you should know and should worry about. So it's going to be tool to tool to tool if you're interested. We do have cards out here with
Marcus.
With the link to the information that we will provide later with links to all the tools. Actually, the OneNote that didn't work for me, it will hopefully work for you. Of course, if you're running for this stuff, you will get one of the TrueSec t-shirts. For the first guy who ever comes up there. Other than that, thank you very much for attending. Thank you so much.
Thank you.